Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life Coach Radio Network. I'm David Frank Gomes, and thanks for joining me on Frank Talk, a conversation about the art and science of a happy, meaningful life. I'm a co-active life compass coach and spiritual mentor, and you can always find out more about myself and my work at my website, lifecompasscoaching.ca. So let's get started. Tonight I have the privilege and good fortune to have Sonia Medina Haynes with us for a feature chat. Sonia is an author, she's an emotional healing therapist, and an intuitive healer. She's descended from a lineage of medicine women and men. Her grandmother was a powerful midwife and healer in the local community where a doctor was not readily available. Sonia's gift of insight was developed throughout a childhood that she came to realize was training for the powerful work she does today. Her focus is on self-love as the force that will heal this world. She's also an author of The Power of Money, How You See Money is How You See Yourself, which looks at the spiritual and emotional connection that affect our ability to honor our gifts. So welcome, Sonia.
Thank you very much, David. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to have you on the show, and thank you for taking time. I know that your apartment, we were just talking before the show, is being renovated, so you're in sort of the middle of a war zone, but so thank you. And but one of the things we were talking about just before the show was that we both believed that we have to start asking ourselves not only better questions, but more beautiful questions, because our world needs this more than ever if we're to usher in this new era of peace and sustainable prosperity for ourselves. Because this earth is like a rental unit. You know, it's not ours. We're just renting it. And we have to leave it in good shape for the next inhabitant who will take over. So what are your thoughts on this, and what do you think is the important work that needs to be done today?
Yes, I love the term that you used before I start, that Earth is a rental unit, because it certainly is. One of the things that we don't recognize, which is a pattern for us human beings, is that the only time we consider that the Earth needs that we need to do something to heal the planet is when we as a human race feels that we're threatened, that our existence is threatened, and then we start to run around, oh, we've got to say, fix this and we've got to fix that. And when I look out and, you know, gosh, I have tons to say, which I say all the time and bore my friends terribly, which they say they're not bored, but I wonder, is that... you know, we as human beings need to recognize that if we were not here, and they did a really amazing program some time ago that showed what the planet would look like if human beings all of a sudden one day vanished off the face of the earth, and the earth would continue. She would survive. It would take her probably 100,000 years to get herself back onto balance, but she would survive. So based on that,
that are you
theory
there,
that the planet. Yes, I'm here.
Hello?
Can you hear me? Hello, I'm here.
Oh, sorry, you're cutting. I think you're cutting out.
Oh, dear.
Oh, there you're back.
Okay. Oh, that's really odd.
When you were saying
odd.
Something really profound.
okay. Gosh, this is not good. Okay, well, I'm going to try and keep the phone. I'm using the phone. I probably should have used the Skype, but I don't know. We'll see. If it doesn't work, I might have to come back on another line. But
okay.
We'll see.
Where I lost you was you were sort of saying the Earth can survive without us, but we can't survive without the Earth.
That's right. And there are so many films and movies and books written that have shown that, where aliens come onto the planet. There was one called The Day the Earth stood still, where the alien came to take human beings off the planet because it said without humans, the planet would survive. But if you save the humans, and we continue on the way that our self-destructive ways, because everything we're doing is self-destructive. We're not necessarily destroying the planet as much as we're actually affecting ourselves. If there's a flood, we get hurt, right? So he basically came and he said, this is the reason why we're going to wipe the planet clean, get rid of, and at the end of the movie, he basically took away all our technologies, all our cars, nothing ran, and we had to start back from basics. And I think, you know, we like to talk about spirituality, and we like to talk about, you know, the whole idea of love and light and all of this, but we keep forgetting that we need to go back to basics within ourselves. We need to go back to the core of ourselves to understand who we are. Over the Temple of Delphi and also over the temples in ancient Egypt, it said, know yourself. In Egypt, it said, know thyself and you will know the universe. Or no, and you will know the gods. And in Egypt, it said, know thyself and you will know the universe. And this is it. We keep, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's bugging me about the world today. But basically,
we've got a lot of things that we need to work on.
Yeah, well, we do. But the main thing we need to do is to literally accept and love ourselves. When a baby is born, it loves, it knows itself as love. It is the journey from birth to, let's say, 6 years old that causes us to stop loving ourselves through various situations that happen. And it's what I find interesting is that we tend, you know, when I talk, it's not about blaming parents, because parents are the result of their parents. And I think, can you imagine coming from, you know, thousands of years ago where we didn't even consider the rights of an individual? We basically, you walked in, bopped somebody on the head, pushed them out their homes, and then you took over. And through generations of understanding that that wasn't right and working through all those things, we've come to a place on the planet where now we're able to recognize that what our ancestors did wasn't correct. Do you know what I mean? And so we're now at a place where, what do I do next? That's what the human race is at. We're literally at a wall where we're asking ourselves, where do I go from here? What do I do next? Now I've created all the abundance that, you know, that they said I was supposed to create, and I'm still unhappy. Right? I've gone out to find love, and sometimes I find it and sometimes I miss it, and I'm still not happy. So what is it that we need to do to shift our consciousness so that we can meld with the earth? We can actually start moving in a symbiotic journey with the earth as she moves through our universe. That's, I think that's where we're at this time.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me a little bit of the book, The Four Agreements. You know, it feels,
yes,
like we have to start tearing up those agreements and building new agreements, because, in fact, we've been sold a bill of goods. There's not enough, can't sustain us, you know, on and on and on. When, in fact, you know, perhaps none of these things are actually true. And, you know, the question then becomes, how do we as individuals shift out of this paradigm, which I think is what you're referring to, this,
yes,
idea of self-love, healing the world.
Yes.
It's really about sort of discovering your own divinity, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're using perfect terms, baby. You're using absolutely perfect terms. Each individual, let me start over with one of my pet peeves right now, is that we are actually disgorging all our vile and our poison and our garbage out for others to experience. You know, you have the TV shows where people are yelling and screaming at each other, and it's on television and everybody's listening to it. And no, I'm not a self-righteous individual. I believe everyone has the ability, you know, should do what they want. But in my world, everyone has a right to feel what they want to feel, but imposing it on someone else is actually not necessarily a way of showing your own self sense of empowerment. Do you know what I mean? I was walking up the street just a little while ago before our conversation today, and I noticed a woman. She stopped her car at the side, parked it by the sidewalk there, and she was cleaning out her car, and she threw the garbage on the ground. Now, when I grew up, you weren't allowed to throw your garbage on the ground. There was a receptacle right there. She didn't put it in the receptacle. She threw it on the ground. And to me, I'm going to call you back on my other phone just because this has not happened before on this phone. So maybe there's interference or something, but I'll call you back on my other line.
Okay,
you keep
sure.
Talking
well, I'll
and
keep
I'll call
going
you
here while you're, and you can call me back.
Okay, and you'll see my number come up. It's a different number, so you'll see me come up. Okay. Bye.
So, I think this idea of creating a new paradigm is really interesting because there doesn't seem like there can be much of a future without it. Everything that we are working towards now, the ideas we have about prosperity and happiness, they seem to revolve more around this. The sense of an individual, like what an individual has to have, and we need to get to a place, I believe, where we see the collective, we see the community, we see the world as ourselves, and so we need to find new questions to ask ourselves, more beautiful questions that actually might be. Something like, here's one that I like. If happiness was the national currency of your country, what kind of work would make you wealthy? Okay, there she is. She's back. Hello.
Hello there. Okay. Can you hear me now?
There's
that sound. Yes, okay.
Well, sometimes you have technical difficulties. That's life.
That's kind of funny hopefully this phone works really well. I loved what you just said. If happiness was the currency of your country, what was it you said? What work would make you wealthy? And actually, that is one of the prime, and so I know I've forgotten what I was saying before, but that is one of the prime questions that we need to ask because too many people, this again is part of that disgorgement of the stuff you don't want, too many people are in jobs that they don't like. They're working because they feel they have to. And unfortunately, what that's doing is that it's leaving very unhappy individuals, but it's actually causing people to work far more hours for less pay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and again, it's another one of these built-in agreements we have that somehow, even the idea of this minimum wage debate, where people say, oh, we can't afford to pay people a living wage, because the economy will collapse. And we have to find new ways around this, and I really believe this idea of when you actually develop this compassion and love within yourself, and you start mm-hmm. to see the world as part of yourself,
mm-hmm.
your desires naturally change. You have to figure out how much is enough? What is enough? What is true wealth?
Yeah. And I beg your pardon?
I guess that's different for everyone, but my sense is that, perhaps we could, most of us could probably live with a lot less and actually be happier.
Yes. There are a few little things that I met two different men in 1996 when I first started this journey and I was roaming about trying to figure myself out about taking this. Am I cutting out again?
Yeah. No, you're back
now,
though.
Then it's not the phone, because I just went on a different phone, so maybe it's just...
I think some other people on our network have had this problem, actually.
I don't have that kind of problem with when I do blog talk. And the first guy that I met, when I started this work, I was told you shouldn't charge too much for your work because it's a gift. And any time, artists, writers, anyone who does anything creative, I was told that it's a gift, and because it's a gift, you shouldn't charge too much for it. And it didn't make sense to me, but okay, I charged very little in 1996. And I went to Sedona on a trip where I met a shaman. He was quite fascinating. He was an Hasidic Jewish man, really dark complected, probably because of the desert sun. Had one of those cool comb-overs that used to be around in the late 90s. And he was channeling Jesus. Okay?
Wow.
So this interesting character, and of course I was very skeptical with everything, but he said we need to have a talk. I said okay, and I sat in front of him. And the first thing, he didn't know me, right? The first thing he said to me was, they said to tell you, because he's channeling the guide, that you're not charging enough for your work. And I was quite startled because I've been told all the time, so anyone who's taken on this emotional healing, spiritual journey have been told that you shouldn't charge too much because it's a gift. So he said that to me. He said, you're not charging enough. And I said, what do you mean? How much should I charge? And he immediately came out and said $1,000 an hour, and I almost fell off the chair. I literally went blank for a second as if I'd passed out because I was charging $20 an hour. And he said $1,000. And I said, I don't understand. And I said, really, honestly, tell me, how much do you think I should charge? And his question back to me was, how much do you think you're worth? That was a light, as Oprah called it, that was a light bulb moment. That was an epiphany for me. Because what he said to me was, they said to tell you that you need to charge more so that you can do more. You need to charge enough so you can do more of the work. Now, when they say that if you pay people, and this is the problem why we have an economic problem, is that when they say if you increase people's salaries that the economy will collapse, I don't know who's making that up. The economist who's actually making that statement, first of all, should get himself the four agreements and read it. That's the first thing he should do. And a bunch of those other beautiful books. And he should look at the fact that people love to spend money. And if they have more money to spend, they will spend it, which will boost the economy. Do you know what I mean? So from a logic, take spirituality out of it. From a logical perspective, if people are paid more, they will spend more, which will support the economy. That's just a natural law of mathematics, I think, or whatever, economics or whatever it is that. So you were saying earlier that all our laws and all our the things that we've been taught need to change, and that's one thing that certainly needs to change. But the individual themselves must start to recognize that they are more valuable, they're valuable enough to be paid more. So it's a two-part story. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting riddle in a way, because really what we're getting at is not that more is better or less is better, but perhaps a new form of what I might term caring capitalism, or a new way of looking at how what's the human potential in an economy? How does happiness factor into it?
Yes.
So I look at it more from a happiness perspective than anything else. What you're saying is right. There's a great book called The Soul of Money by Lynn Twist, and what I really learned from that book is that giving and receiving are the same. So in order
yes.
for a wealthy
yes.
person to give something, say, to a poor person, there needs to be a receiver in order for a giver. So when we get to a society where we have created more equality, where we see that every piece of the puzzle is important,
mm-hmm.
A teacher is as important as an actor or a football player, and a healer or an intuitive therapist is as important as a CEO.
Yes.
Then we'll find some natural balance, I believe, that will sort of take us to another level.
Everything will fall into place. The individual must recognize his and her importance, which means that individual loves himself enough to recognize the value of his contribution to the human society.
Yes.
Once
yeah.
you recognize, so for example, you are...
What do you feel is the core of the work you do with the people you work with? I mean, how would you describe it to someone who's an alien who's come down from a planet and they grow up? They don't know anything about you or your work or this, and they're
yes,
like,
the alien
you,
would actually... Yes. I call myself an emotional healer because what I do is I take the individual back. All their hurts and pain are stripped down to the core of what I call the original sin. So within our lives, there is one moment in our lives, and I'll back up for a second. When you were born, you knew yourself to be perfect, whole, and complete. And when I say that, I know there are many different ideas that say that a child is born in sin and so on, but no. When a child is born, it knows itself to be perfect. That's why it doesn't need to run like the baby wildebeest in out there in the Sahara. It knows itself to be beautiful and perfect, and it is closest to the divine or to God or universal spirit or whatever term you want to call that beautiful intelligence that is all love that exists and wraps itself around us. And when you, in order for us to remain in the physical dimension, we need to have something like the little bit of sand within the oyster's shell that causes it to create a pearl. We need a little bit of sand to irritate us, to cause us to remain. It actually makes us wake up in the physical dimension. So whether it be our mother's feeling of discontent or hurt, or our father feeling, oh my gosh, what do I do now? I've got a baby. All of those, we are high, high, high intuitives when we were born. We can understand exactly what people are feeling and seeing and experiencing and even what they're saying, but we can feel their emotions and we can hear what they're saying. And when we're born and we experience that one first little bit of sand in our psyche, it weights us down. It actually makes us heavy. And in that heaviness, we gain consciousness in the human experience. That is the original thing. And what I do in my work is I take people back to that tiny seed, that little sand, and once they've actually figured it out and seen it, the love for themselves from that point is activated, and it brings them back to this moment, because you can change your past by the way you look at it. And that's what my job is. My job is to help you to change your view of yourself in your world from your childhood, which then changes your view of today, which absolutely changes your future, because there is no time.
Right. And so... is that always the case, that one has to go back to their childhood, or do you deal with people, is that always the way it unfolds?
It actually is. I had I'm not going to, there are no names, just the general, but for example, a couple who are wanting to, they're in love with each other, okay, but one, of course, the male runs away, and women can't understand why a man runs. Why does he run away from me when I love him so much and I know he loves me? But he runs away, and she is distraught with that, and she decides to close up her wall. So in talking with her, I say, okay, well, this is a test. If he's willing to come and see me, then we're good. So he comes to see me, and he sits down, and the first question I ask is, why are you here? And the first answer he gives me, which he will not say to her, is, I don't know why I messed up something that was so beautiful to me. So that's the first thing. I understand the emotional, and this is the thing for a lot of women need to know how their men think. And he, you know, so I said, okay, well, we worked through it. And he went back to his childhood, through all the way through to before he was 4 years old, when an event occurred that made him so hurt, that hurt him so badly. And when I took him back to it and I got him to sit down and write, so writing, letter writing and note-taking within the self is a very large part of my work. But I took him back to connect with that part of himself, which you can see when you go back. And he was able to write a letter to the person who caused him the hurt, basically sat down and wrote the letter. And as he was writing it, he gained empathy for that part of himself, for the child who he was. Mm. And as he gained empathy, he was shaking his head,
wow,
like, I can't believe they did that to me. I can't believe it. But it wasn't about anger. It was about washing away the pain. When he was done, he went away and he thought about it. And you know what? The two were able to communicate with each other clearly and what people like to use lovingly, and understand where the other person is coming from. When anyone is struggling in a relationship, the first step you need to do is to go back and look at you, the reason why you're struggling in the first place, and then try to understand why the other person is struggling, and it will come around, right? So that's kind of in a nutshell the gist of what I do. And it works. It's worked incredibly well over the years, the 17 years that I've been doing this work.
Wow. And tell me a little bit more about this idea of sort of intuitive healing, and how does one go about? Because that's also a gift that I've had since I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you think one develops their natural affinity for their intuitive gifts, or how do you help people to develop it?
Okay. So remember when I said that when you were born, you were a high intuitive? That never left you. The problem is that when you were little, if you saw a shadow in the corner and you go to your mom or your dad or someone and you say, oh, I saw Cousin Joey, but Cousin Joey passed away, and they say to you, don't be stupid, it's just your imagination and stuff like that, you tend to shut down that intuitive part of yourself. And especially when you're in school and you don't want to be laughed at, again, you tampered it. You basically pushed it down deep inside of yourself and covered it up with your own view, with, you know, society's view of what an intuitive person or what an individual on the planet should be like. So what I do, again, is first of all, get that individual. Some people call it soul retrieval. So I take you back again to first of all, I take you through exercises so that you gain confidence in your abilities. And, you know, I have the ability to read, to sense what a person is feeling. It doesn't mean that I invade their privacy and, you know, start diddling around in their heads. But if an individual comes to me and they want to understand themselves better, because I've chosen over the years not to cover up that very powerful part of myself, I'm able to feel. Like I literally feel if that person is afraid, I feel a kick in the solar plexus. If that person is happy, I feel, you know, thrilled. If someone has some kind of, for example, if I've had people walked into my space and they're dealing with, you know, some kind of immune issue like cancer and that, I literally feel like I'm sitting in a hot kettle roasting. So I have, and it's the what I do is I teach my students how to recognize the signs, how to understand what they're feeling. Because there are a lot, especially women, who, you know, you go out and you have a feeling and you think it's you. But that's because you're criticizing yourself. When you get past self-criticism, you can then trust the information that's coming in. And when you are able to trust it, you'll understand. Now, you ask yourself, is it, and this is one of the quick little tricks. If you go, if you're out in the world or you're in your home and all of a sudden you have a rush of emotion and it doesn't feel, it doesn't feel like you, but you're not sure, you ask the question, is this mine or is this someone else's? And you'll hear an answer. The very first answer you hear is the truth. That's the other thing. The very first answer you hear always is the truth. And then you ask, whose is it? And you'll hear a voice. And it is your inner self. Paulo Coelho wrote in one of his books, it's called The Second Mind. It's a part of yourself that has a song that goes on, that song that never ends and goes on and on and on, and you can't get rid of it in your mind. So that's the part of ourselves that actually is truly connected to our lives, to other people, to nature, to the trees. It's a part of ourselves that when you pass a tree and you touch it, you're passing a tree, and the tree tells you, touch me. And, you know, some people think, oh, that's weird. But the tree is actually asking you to touch it, either because in touching the tree, you will be able to heal the tree, or the tree is going to help you with your healing. Do you know what I mean? So we have that
connection. Yeah, I think it's interesting what you said about childhood. And
yes.
I really think that's true. Because as a child, when you're nurtured and the magic is not beaten out of you, it feels like in the paradigm we're in, the magic gets beaten out of children from an early age. The education system is beating it out of them. And when it's nurtured and accepted and honored, it certainly it allows it to flourish. And so I feel in a way that's the same type of work I do. It's when you allow someone to recognize, or when you recognize in someone their own gift, you allow them to actually inhabit it again.
Yes.
That's a way of saying it, but I think that's the power of the work we do, is that we hold people as having that ability because we are able to experience it ourselves. For me, my intuition doesn't show up quite like that. It shows up in sort of a different way, but I've never doubted it, not for a second.
And that is beautiful because, and it's kind of funny because your puppy isn't making any noise in the background. He's very quiet there. But you have a very strong connection to him, right?
Yeah.
The two of you communicate. Now, in some cultures, an animal would be called a person's familiar, and that's why a lot of animals are now with people, like dogs are with people and cats are with people and birds and that sort of thing. And if you have five dogs in the house, there's one that will actually connect with you more solidly than the others. And that animal has the ability to assist you in growing your intuition or to actually trust it. Because I feel, my sense is that you do, the highest form of communication with spirit is feeling. It's not hearing and it's not seeing. It's the ability to sense, to feel what is going on. Because when you're able to sense in, to that degree, then the hearing and the seeing comes in after, right? And so you have the ability
And then some words show up and you're not quite sure who's saying them, but
There you go. There you go. So it's the trusting what you feel that is the biggest part of it all.
Yeah. That's the hidden magic that's waiting to be discovered in every life.
Yes.
I mean, can you imagine a world where that faculty is alive in society?
Yes.
What a different world it would look and feel like. We wouldn't even be focusing on some of the issues we're focusing on today because they would no longer have any importance to us.
Yes, that's true. You know, it's funny because many times in our society, people such as yourself have stepped forward to utilize your skills and gifts and to try and train others, and were either your powers were then captured and misused by government officials. That is something that has happened. I mean, the Nazis used the intuitive and psychic skills of many people. They did, to try and get the upper hand. And even in the 30s and 40s, you know, many government officials used the gifts and the skills of intuitives. And even today, I wouldn't be surprised if the skills of intuitives are being used. But on a practical level, doctors, especially a surgeon who can figure out what's going on inside of an individual, is a high intuitive. A banker guy who just knows in his gut, you ever heard people say that? I just know it in my gut. That individual is a high intuitive, and he or she's using his intuitive gifts. The problem is that we are still looking at the intuitive ability in a negative way, and because of that, no one is actually wanting to own it. You know, when they talk about, a ghost or a spiritual guide or an angel showed up, and, you know, they're a little bit embarrassed to talk about it out loud because, you know, they might be seen as a kook or they might be thrown into an insane asylum. But everyone, from the highest person up there to the lowest person, use their intuitive skills at one time or the other. That's the funny thing about our world.
You know, as a coach and a mentor, my clients are often asking me, you know, what's for advice on, you know, books to read or ideas when they're looking to change, make transformation in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say the same thing. It's like, if you can be part of a lineage, then that's how the teachings get passed down, and that's how they can remain pure. Because you even notice this with this idea of intuitive gift. The teachings get passed through a lineage so that the teacher gives them to the student and they're safe, they're protected, they're not used for evil, they're used for good.
Yeah.
And sometimes you see people really do go off the rails with their gifts, whether they're gifts of money or gifts of, you name it. I think maybe the same thing can happen with the inner gifts. Sometimes people are, or they're frightening for people. They don't understand them, and they're trying to figure them out. And so someone like yourself is maybe able to offer safe passage in a way. That's kind of what I think about that.
Yeah. It's a funny thing. I mean, as you were talking, I think I told you before that one of the things that I learned about my family history was that I'm descendant from Queen Nanny in Jamaica. She was a Maroon slave from the and she was a slave that came from the Ashanti tribe in Africa to Jamaica, and she was such an audacious babe that she refused to remain in slavery, separated herself, took a whole bunch of slaves with her, and then they fought the British. And she was considered to be what they call an Obia woman, which meant that she was a very powerful medicine woman with understanding of nature and trees and the moon and all of those things. And my memory of my grandmother, who would have been nanny's grandchild, but my memory of my grandmother was always of this very elegant, strong, powerful woman who birthed babies and, you know, healed disorders. And both sides of my grandparents, like, one took away epilepsy from my sister. She got tired of having to wake up every night to deal with this epileptic child. So she went off, got some herbs, got some stuff, brought it back, and my sister's never had an epileptic fit since. And she was around, I got there 6. So she might have been around 6 or 7 years old the last time she had it. And she's, you know, how old is she now? She's probably just turning 50 or thereabouts, and she's not had another episode since. Now, I didn't know enough to look at the herbs that she used to understand it. But, you know, it's funny because now we're starting to look back at all those things from our ancestors. You know, where you're concerned, let's say, you know, and that's just me with my stuff, but if your ancestry comes out of the Celtic tradition, so out of Europe, which is Great Britain, England, Scotland, Wales, all those areas, if you came out of Germany, because, you know, around the Black Forest region, part of the Nordic areas, you have a very, very, very powerful connection to the intuitive realm. And that is why when you sit down to communicate with your clients, you can sense, and that's a very powerful term, you can sense their story so that you can guide them. And that's all we do, basically. We can fix things for them, but it doesn't help them for us to fix it. But we guide them towards their truth, and they must know what their truth is. So when we take them there, they can recognize it and say, yes, this is mine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I guess if you spend enough time with somebody who believes in magic, you start to believe in magic. And I feel like we're living in a magical and responsive and mysterious universe. And we need to accept that and embrace it and enjoy it. But we have this sort of mechanistic view of the world where everything becomes very solid and concrete and heavy. Coaching and healing and the work is to bring back the magic to life and let people know that it's everywhere. The universe is teeming with magic, waiting for people to embrace it.
Yes, it'll make us smile. It'll make us get up every morning with a great big smile on our faces and just walk around as if we have the most wonderful secret and we're willing to share it if someone asks. That's what happens when we connect in that way, when we understand ourselves to such a degree where we let go of the pain and the hurt and the fear. We will have that. I call it the peace that you cannot understand, because we will have a peace that doesn't go out searching for anger or pain or fear. Do you know what I mean? We won't search for it because we won't even recognize it anymore.
Yeah, no, I think that's an amazing point, and it's something that comes up again and again in the coaching and mentoring relationship, is that we generate conclusions about our external world, and then we have no choice but to go out and seek evidence that is true. So simply by generating a new conclusion, one is forced to start looking for different evidence, and you find the things you're looking for in the places you're looking. So I think that's a really, it's such a simple but such a beautiful shift. And I feel in a strange way that the world is going back to the simpler ideas. The inherent wisdom of the ancient tradition. And some of the things that we're discovering are so simple, and yet they work.
Isn't it just beautiful, though?
I think we have a caller here. Maybe we should suggest that. Are you okay to do some readings if people want to call in?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
The number is 646. 9397. Let's just see if this caller wants to ask you a question. Hey, hello.
Hello, thank you for taking my call tonight.
Yeah, sure. Do you have a question for Sonia?
Yes. Hey, Sonia, how you doing? This is Melvin.
Oh, hello, love. How are you? You found me. That's excellent.
Yeah, I had to track you down. Yes, ma'am. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to, you know, I don't have a general question. Just, you know, what's coming up for me in the next couple of months in any area that you can pick up on.
Okay. Let me just... The energy around you feels a lot lighter than it used to.
Thank God for that.
Yeah. And again, all you need to do is to just keep your faith alive, as they use the term faith. I mean, I'm using that in a general statement. Just keep your faith alive because things are coming around for you. It's been a long haul. It's been a very challenging journey, but it's about to end. And it'll end in trickles as opposed to it being a giant. I mean, if you win the Powerball, just let me know. Don't just disappear now. But I think things things are coming, are slowly starting to fall into place. It's like that Tetris game.
Yes, ma'am.
I only played it a few times, but it is like that Tetris game where, you know, the pieces fall into place and then a line is created or something to that effect, but it's slowly starting to come around. It seems as if you're letting go of a lot of old stuff. You're finally, and I use the word finally, letting go of a lot of stuff. So just keep the faith and just be still because it's coming into form for you, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Will that be like in all areas of my life, financially, relationships, career?
Actually, yes. And it's funny because the career stuff will come forward, which will actually give you the financial fulfillment, which will cause you to feel secure within yourself, and then the relationship thing will come. So it's 1, 2, 3. It's not going to all show up all at once. I don't think you can handle it. They're looking after you by taking care of one and then the other and then the other. So it'll be a nice, easy flow.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
You're welcome, love. Take care. Keep on the great work.
Thank you. I love you. Thank you very much.
I love you too. Take care, love.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
So, I got a question for you. What would you say is the difference between being alive and truly living?
Being alive does not require anything. And when I say alive, I mean the sparkle that comes from the stars and the light that comes from the sun. That energy that flows through everything that causes the little green buds to come up through the earth, that's being alive. Truly living is dependent on not dying.
Right.
So one is dependent on the other, whereas the other is, one is dependent on something that is its opposite, and the other is just being.
It's just the natural cycle of what
yes.
is.
Yes, yes.
And that's a beautiful answer. How do you think we motivate, or how would you motivate someone to step out into their unique destiny? I always feel like each person has a part to play in this mystery.
Well, the one thing that I know about myself is that if I meet you, your life, meet you by talking to you or whatever, your life will absolutely change. You are a game changer on the planet. Whether it be that you write a poem, you write a book, you write a story, you write a song, you counsel people, so on and so forth.
that's the one thing I know about myself, which was told to me, you know, and then I went back to remember all of those things. So I have the ability to see the extent of where you can go. Now, that becomes a challenge because when I can see you, when I can see how far you're able to reach, when I can see how far you're able to go, I will tell you, but the problem is most people are so afraid of the responsibility of achieving. They're afraid of the responsibility that I have to walk gently when I share it and I guide them towards it. So, for example, if I sense that a person is going to have a challenge with knowing that their lives, you know, the book that they write will actually change the lives of a whole bunch of people, I will say to them, well, start journaling. I think you need to write the stories that are in your head. You need to write your life story down. And so when they come to see me, the first thing I do with each individual is I give them, in the workshops, I give them a journal that they keep for, you know, as long as they work with me. But if it's a one-on-one counseling, I give them a notepad and I say, I ask, who are you? And I ask them to give me an understanding how they see themselves, even in their personal lives and outside in the world. So that's the beginning stage. And as we work on that, then it slowly moves into the other areas. I remember many years ago, and I, you know, year before I even started on this journey, I met a woman who was, and I don't remember much. She came back and told me these things, but I saw her opening a refuge type of a place for young gay kids, so that they would actually have a place to go when they were thrown out of their homes because they told their parents that they were gay. That was years ago, right? Over 10 years ago. And so, and I told her exactly how it would work, and she looked at me as if I had two heads. Like, she looked at me like, huh? So she, you know, I don't know, 5 or 6 years later, I met up with her, and I'd forgotten that I'd told her these things, told her exactly what to do and how to go about it. And she came to me, she said, I did what you said. I created this place. She gave it a name. I can't remember what the name is. And then I passed it on to the senior gay people in the community, and now I've come to find out what do I do next. You know, and the unfortunate thing for me is that because I'm so I get so much information, I don't always remember everybody's story. Some people's stories come in and they leave. So I'm listening to her, and I can't even place where I'd met her. But, you know, she accomplished everything because she believed in herself and she had a passion. She wanted to do it. And that's the other thing about it is that you never tell a person something that they don't already know. Did you know that?
Yeah. That's a big one.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful because it goes back to the idea of giving and receiving as being the same. I often feel in coaching and mentoring that I'm never sure who's giving and who's receiving, but I know the transformation is happening.
Yes.
I call it spiritual alchemy.
Yes. Yes.
That is a beautiful, magical process.
Yes.
But it really helps to have guides and people who believe in you, who are a unique voice for you in your life.
Yes.
Who are outside of the realm of family and friends and lovers.
It is hard to help someone that you're in love with. It is very hard because they don't usually want to accept what you have to say. So you do need to find someone outside of yourself to guide
Cardinal
you in that
rule,
way.
Never coach or work with your significant other.
Your partner or family. Well, I mean, children, you can do that, but you still sometimes need to have the language, and that's what a coach or an emotional healer, or that's what we have, is we have the language that can translate the information to our clients. That is the difference between us and someone who goes out there and just sort of goes all over the place and say, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and try and give guidance. When you're able to sense within yourself what's going on for that person, you have the ability to know when the individual is in distress, to know exactly what to say and what to do to assist them as you're guiding them through their journey. You know also when they've gotten it. When it clicks, you feel it, you sense it. And that's the power of a life coach who is also a high intuitive, who also uses their intuitive skills. It puts you in a class all to yourself, you see.
Yeah. And that moment when they realize they got it and that shift happens, and sometimes the shifts are really big. It takes my breath away.
I know. Isn't it wonderful? That's when I talk about service. I don't care to use the word very much because it's been used too much. But that's when the word service works. It's when you actually hold a person's hand and takes them down the road and they look up and they see their own sign in the sky and they go, ah, I got it. That is when I say that you have done an incredible service for that individual. You know? And
yeah.
The wonderful thing is that you are actually creating another intuitive guide or life coach who will go off and guide others. That's all we're doing. We are creating guides. We're literally leapfrogging. I help you, you help that person helps the other, and it's literally going to work like, you know, sorry to use the word wildfire because there's so much of it now, but it's going to work like a spiritual wildfire across the planet. So anyone out there who's dealing with emotional challenges, especially when it's huge, find a life coach, especially a high intuitive life coach, because that individual will help you to work through your stuff. And as it works through your stuff, you in turn will be given the legacy to go out and help others do the same. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think it was Emerson who said no man can help another without truly helping himself. And it's this principle of the ripples that are created. I mean, I did a film a while back for Big Sisters, and it was about the power of mentoring and what a profound system Big Sisters is to change the lives of young women who are heading down the wrong path. And it's like one act of kindness, one person who deeply cares about another person changes the trajectory of these lives. These young women go on to do great things. And what do they do?
Yes.
They become Big Sisters.
Yes.
Because
yes.
they realize,
that's...
wow, I've got to give this gift to someone else.
Yes.
Because without that, it sends a shudder through my whole body.
Yes.
Thinking about it. You know?
Yes.
So
that is our purpose.
Is very valuable for people. How can people get a hold of you if they want to get in touch with you and work with you?
A bunch of stuff's happened. One, I just uploaded or installed or whatever. I've just become a teacher on udemy.com, UDEMY, and it's a step-by-step course on how to meditate, so from the breathing to the visualization and so on. My website information is www.soniahaynes.com, SoniaHaynes.com. And if you go to the website, you'll find all the contact information. You can always sign up for the free newsletter, which is always worth reading. And I have a blog on the website, which I all this. So hopefully I didn't get too passionate in our conversation, because I can get really passionate about what's going on the planet, which is very interesting.
No, I think it was wonderful. You know, I mean, we didn't have a plan or any kind of an agenda. It just sort of unfolded.
Yeah.
And, you know, the meditation course sounds wonderful as somebody who's been involved and who actually does. A lot of the people who come to me as well are interested in meditation and mindfulness from my own practice. So I encourage people to check your course out because it's a very, very valuable cornerstone of generating happiness.
Yes, and that is what it's all about. I mean, I'm looking back through my life. There are moments when I've had some little glitches in my experience, but I've been inside, I've been quiet. And that, to me, is a gift that I gave to myself beyond all else. That quiet where I can be still, you know, and it's funny because being in this place with the wall, everything walled up, I realized that I remember that I actually am claustrophobic, but in the midst of all of this, I'm able to quieten that feeling down and not go into panic, which is, you know, so that's what happens when we work through our fears and our emotional challenges, is that we create that peace, that quiet, and wow, it actually, you don't end up going into other, sorry, I'm getting political here, going into other countries to fight them. So, you know, happiness just flows. You're joyful. You're happy. You don't have a need to go and hit someone else or arguing with anybody else or any of those things. And I think we are searching for that happiness. We don't know what it looks like, but we're searching for it. And I'm tell you something, babes. I salute you. I'm sending you tons and tons of powerful healing energy because what you do is amazing, and you will guide so many people towards that word happiness and peace. And that's the final frontier of the human experience. We've done it all except for finding, truly finding and maintaining happiness.
You know, there was a saying, I don't know if Ram Dass said it, but I think it's a nice way to sort of sum it all up, is we're all walking each other home.
Yes.
And
beautifully said.
Along the way, let's make it as happy and as beautiful as we can, you know, with what we have.
Yes.
And start where you are with what you have and actually begin to generate more happiness and peace within yourself. And,
yes.
You know, it's valuable stuff. So I'm sure this will be one of many different conversations we'll have, but it's been an absolute pleasure and an honor to chat with you tonight.
It's great to chat with you, and I'm going to see if I can get you over onto my side so we can have some more talks. And this time, I'll put you on the hot seat, so you're going to have to tell me your bits, which will be really exciting. So let's see if we can have a conversation.
On the hot seat, I love it. I can't wait.
Okay, well, let's set it up for maybe in the next couple of weeks and see what we can do.
Okay, wonderful. So I will say good night to you, and thanks to all the listeners for listening in on the Life Coach Radio Network. And you can check out our, we have three networks.
The archives.
Check out the archives, and we have a show every day on our network, so there's lots of fascinating folks with interesting information on transformation. And I will see everyone, or they'll hear me, they won't actually see me, but in 2 weeks, Monday, for the next installment of Frank Talk. So thank you, everyone. Thank you, Sonia. And have a wonderful
evening. Thank you, love.
Okay.
Good night. Thank you.